episode 108 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded November 17th, 2016. Daylight Savings Television. Telling me that you think the days are getting longer. The days are totally getting shorter.
I feel like I have a very legitimate theory to explain this days getting longer thing that I'm speaking of. You see, since it's getting darker earlier, I tend to watch TV earlier in the evening because I'm like, oh, it's dark, it's time to watch TV, but I'm not tired, so I just stay up all night long watching TV.
So by day, you mean how long you're awake?
Yeah, that's
not
what I mean.
Not how long it's light outside.
Words.
Yeah, I watch TV all night all the time. Are we not doing that?
You should sleep more often, Randy.
No, I don't need to sleep.
Just consider it.
I'll think about it.
Daylight savings, I don't know about this whole time shift. It throws me off because I have two little kids.
Yeah.
And that means, are they going to sleep in because it's dark a little late longer? No. They're waking up on a clock.
Yep.
So all of a sudden I look at the clock and it's like 5:30 and they're like, hey, let's get up. I'm like, no.
Yeah, daylight savings time was invented to punish parents, I'm pretty sure.
It's miserable.
Yeah.
We have to get rid of it.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get rid of it.
But before we do that, before we, you know, enact legislative change, and is really that our priority?
That's what we're focusing on, yeah.
We're just going to focus on, okay.
Affect the change you can.
Before we get into all that, this week we are talking about a whole bunch of TV shows. We're going to discuss SNL, actually. We're going to go talk about the Dave Chappelle appearance on SNL.
Yeah. Variety shows making it to TV Dudes.
Yeah.
I love it.
We're going to talk about TBS's People of Earth. Kyle, you're going to tell us about season 2 of Lovesick.
Oh, yeah.
And Better Things just wrapped up its first season.
Which I loved.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And of course, Westworld. Of course.
Yes, of course.
But before we do all that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
And we're going to do a little house cleaning. First off, I wanted to let you guys know that if you do want to support this site, there are a couple ways you can do that. First off, you can go over to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Write a review. We will read that on the site. If you guys also want to go review anything else on the internet, send us a link. You guys can email me at grant@thetvdudes.com. I'll get it there. Or you can post it on Facebook or Twitter. Let me know. We'll read whatever inane things you want to, you know, write about on the internet.
Just give us 5 stars and be complimentary. That's all we ask.
Yeah, that is really all we ask. And over on patreon.com/TVDudes, that's another place that you guys can support us. There you guys can make a per episode pledge. If you're liking what you're hearing and you want to support what we do, all the money that you guys give us goes right back into the show. And in exchange, we give you guys bonus exclusive content. Which is kind of a sweet deal. Like, hey, we'll talk about all sorts of other stuff. I was thinking we should start doing a poll. We should start polling people and be like, hey, here's like 3 topics that we could discuss on our Patreon. Which of these do you want us to discuss?
That would be fun.
That's a good idea.
The other thing about Patreon, too, is your friends are listening. Don't you want to know what they're listening to? Like, what if we're making fun of you while your friends are listening, and now your friends all are on all the TV Dudes inside jokes?
Yeah, we never make fun of our patrons on our Patreon-exclusive podcast.
There's always the people who aren't patrons.
All of them.
Listen to find out.
So go check that out, because, I think it's a pretty good deal. You make, like, $1 an episode, and if we don't post anything, no charge. Over on Beach Cop Detectives is a third little way you guys can support us. Where Randy and I are doing a little side project. Randy is going through each episode of the TV show Terriers.
I don't know if you're familiar with it. I don't talk about it a whole lot.
Yeah. We have 2 weeks left of that. We're going to do a little wrap-up show. You got a couple more interviews that you need to secure.
Yeah.
And we're at the home stretch.
We are indeed. Yeah, this week's episode was with Mr. Jason Murphy.
Yeah.
Who I mentioned to Grant, I was like, yeah, me and Jason was good on mic with me. And he's like, Jason's good on mic with everybody, which is true.
he's great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Tom Feaster, who was on another episode with me, posted and was like, this was the best episode yet. And I'm like, dude, You were on an episode. But yeah, we've got the exit interview with Ted Griffin coming up. We've got an interview with Sean Ryan coming up. Dude, and yeah, quite possibly someone involved in the music side of Terriers will be talking to me.
That's pretty rad.
So yeah, and then we're open to, after we get the last two episodes out there, we're hoping to do a 14th episode that sort of wraps it up with me and producer Grant and our artist Nate Bliss, and we're going to talk about all things Terriers and putting the show together. It's a little behind the scenes package. It's our DVD extras episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had a little bit of a scare the other day.
We did have a little bit of a scare.
I was on Netflix looking at Terriers, as you know I do, because that's what we're doing with this whole thing. And it told me that the show was going to expire on December 1st.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
And it said this for a while.
Oh, yeah. It said that for... We were really trying to, like, how are we going to get this out? That would have been the day that our 13th episode dropped.
It would be the day before, I think.
The day before. That's even better.
It was like, shit.
Yeah.
I guess we can push up our schedule.
That's gone now.
What? Yeah, it no longer says that.
Yeah.
Which... I'm hoping that means it's not going to expire. They renewed or something. I don't know.
I would guess that's what happened, is there was some kind of licensing thing.
Or maybe they just don't show the dates anymore.
No.
And it's going to disappear.
Ugh. No, I think it was... I mean, because I've seen that before with other shows and other movies where it's like, this is only going to be available for 2 more days, and then it's 4 days later, it's still there.
They just re-up.
They just re-up.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, well, anyway, that's beachcopdetectives.com. Go check that out. I think we have quite a nice package going there.
Yeah.
And now we're going to move on to some listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, once a week we will post up a little question post and you guys can ask us whatever your heart desires. Our first question this week comes to us from Alejandro Rey Zapata, who says, what place that a character or characters from a TV show work at would you like to work at? You'll be able to hang out with the characters too. I would want to work at the Golden Palace to work with the Golden Girls. Yeah, I'm like, do I want to work at Central Perk with the Friends gang?
Oh, no, it's awful. Yeah. Ooh.
No, because I'd have to hang out with, what's his name?
Gunther.
Gunther.
Gunther's probably better than any of the Friends, really, if you had to hang out with one of them, though.
Oh, yeah. Can I work at, like, Princess Bubblegum's castle in Adventure Time?
Oh, you know, Jay Peterman from Seinfeld?
Yeah.
It'd probably be a nightmare to work there, but it'd be an entertaining nightmare. Oh. Like, if you didn't care about your money...
Feel like that would just be a nightmare.
It might be awful. Yeah.
I feel like there's a ton of New York-based jobs that would, you know, be around TV shows. Like, you could just be, you know, going from, like, one sandwich shop to coffee shop to to bar and just, like, hit a ton of New York shows.
Like, in this hypothetical scenario, if I were working at the office of Nelson and Murdoch, would I know? Ooh. Like, would I know that he's Daredevil?
You know, everybody in that office does know, but I think in this case, you'd be intern Grant, and you'd be the one guy who didn't know, and they'd be like...
Wouldn't know, and I'd be doing a bunch of paperwork. That would suck.
Yeah, that's your job. Your job is doing paperwork. And probably being killed by a random supervillain.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just totally changed my answer after hearing you say that. Yeah. I totally want to be the white guy working at the Luke Cage barbershop. Like... It'd be a deprecating position. I get made fun of all the time, but I feel like it'd build character.
But you'd also probably die in a shooting.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean,
it would not turn out well for you. We wouldn't make it very many episodes, it seems.
I'd like to work at S.H.I.E.L.D. just to kind of walk around the helicarrier, but I mean, because you can play Galaga on the job.
Yeah.
I feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. might not be such a bad place to work.
Well, maybe the office at Parks and Rec?
Just maybe
the crew.
But don't you think Leslie would be the worst boss ever?
I feel like she would make me into a better person.
That's probably true.
I'd want to be the receptionist at Entertainment 720. Or we just don't do anything.
Even better. Yeah.
I just let the phone ring. I don't even have to answer it.
I mean, it's a short-term job until they go to business. Yeah. How about the Snake Hole Lounge? You find a job at the Snake Hole Lounge?
Miserable. Our next question comes to us from Dennis McElwain, who says, are there any TV shows that you can't understand why people like them? Superstore and musicals, I guess musicals just in general, are awful or bland.
You know what, Dennis? I know you're talking to me. I know it. I heard you didn't say, Randy, Superstore and the musicals are terrible, but I know it was a dream to me.
He's just trying to talk about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It's like, musicals are terrible.
First of all, musicals are great. And second of all, Superstore is an underrated comedy. Although, I'll be honest, I'm not even watching season 2, but it's better than it has any right to be. It's got a good cast. So... answer is, you're wrong on both of those. But the general question of, are there shows where you can't understand why people like them? Yeah. Most of them are on CBS.
Most network shows. Yeah. We don't understand why these shows do well.
Yeah.
Like, I think we always complain about Two and a Half Men.
Yes.
And Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
And it's like, why do you guys enjoy watching those?
How is Bold the best, the most popular new show of this season, given how many great shows there
were? Are they just talking about CBS shows when they say that? Because I hear that, where they're yeah. like, the most popular new show of last season. Yeah. What was it? The Blind Spot.
Yeah.
I'm like, who the hell was watching The Blind Spot?
Yeah, nobody we know, but everybody else is watching The Blind Spot.
The Bachelor. Bachelorette. Yeah. I can't do it.
That's in The Bad Place. You only watch that in The Bad Place.
Every show that Greg used to watch on HGTV, he watched the worst of the worst garbage.
What do you mean used to watch? Greg's still watching that.
He probably still watches it. Kardashian show. There's a lot of garbage out there. Yes. I don't understand why people watch.
You know, I hate to derail this, but your Good Place comment.
Yeah.
Ever since I started watching that show, I don't know if it's real or not, but I've started picking up trash on the side of the street,
just in case,
helping old ladies. Yeah, yeah.
You
just
don't
in case.
A bad place.
You start thinking about it when you watch TV like that.
It's full of douchebags.
I know who watch reality TV shows and Two and a Half Men.
Ross Brown says, "Hello, TV dudes. Are there certain types of characters that tend to be your favorite? For example, I like characters who are messed up, but have some sense of humor to them, like Jessica Jones or BoJack Horseman."
You know, when he asked this question, I had to face a harsh truth about myself, which is I like damaged people who think they're badasses. Like Vic Mackey. I love Vic Mackey. I was trying to think of some of the other characters that I had a few. But like the Terriers guys. I love those guys. I love damaged characters, apparently, who are sort of either witty or tough.
Yeah, I guess I can see, I tend to gravitate toward bad people that you can kind of understand their motivations.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that'd be the Walter Whites out there. Or
Always
the,
Sunny.
The Always Sunny gang. Speaking of places I would never want to work.
Oh, Patty's Pub?
Yeah. Oh.
Or anybody in their restaurant district. Because they every other episode, they're screwing up somebody else's bar.
I would be Cricket. It would be terrible.
My favorite kind of characters are like Luther, who are just, trying to do the right thing. But no matter what they do, they have to kind of, bend the rules and have to, they can't rest on ideals. Everything's kind of a gray area for them, because it always makes me think more about my life, about, times where I have kind of radical views on, oh, this person said that, or they did this. Like, often that's not the case. And yeah, especially with that show Luther, I mean, every situation he goes through, there's no black or white way to handle it. He's always got a, Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
That's another good example where I, especially early on, no matter what he did, there was no, he always kind of had to, there was no easy way out, no black or white way to solve his problems.
There's compromise in some degree.
Mm-hmm. There's nowhere on Breaking Bad I want to work either. Maybe Grey Matter, maybe.
You don't want to work at Pollos Locos?
Los Pollos Hermanos? I don't think. I just think you probably wind up dead. You see somebody you shouldn't and that's it.
Yeah, I think comic relief characters also, I'm always gravitating toward them. Although a lot of them, they can be hit or miss. But, you think of Andy Dwyer. Think of Hurley from Lost. These jolly people, oftentimes more in dramas, the jolly person who tries to make everyone just feel better about a shitty situation.
Yeah.
I like that. It makes it real, because that is real. There's always someone trying to be like, hey, let's not always just think of the most depressing shit. Let's try and also be a little positive occasionally. Anyway, everything's terrible. I don't even know why I was saying that.
Everything's not awesome.
Zach McLernan says, one topic that seems to be popping up more often in TV is abortion and the way it's handled. And that seems to be a little bit varied. For example, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend recently portrayed this as a reasonable decision made after due consideration, whereas Master of Sex and You're the Worst portrayed it as a decision that, while justified based on a right to choose, was seen as a complicated decision that had relationship-altering consequences. All this being said, do you feel abortion as a subject is being handled appropriately, or does it have a long way to go?
I think we're making progress.
No lie, I went to a, I'm not going to tell you what movie because I'm actually going to spoil it if I do, but I went to a film the other night, and sure enough, if it didn't get to the end and it was all about abortion, like tied it up and they had this big agenda on abortion. It's definitely like it, in the hot spot right
it
now.
It was Moana, wasn't it?
Damn it. I'm going to give away the ending now.
Shit, that one's going to be intense.
Disney's going dark.
Well, I mean, I think it is a complex, you know, issue that people handling it in different ways in different shows makes sense. I appreciate that you'll see a show like BoJack Horseman, which will address it in one way where it will be like so absurdly like over the top callous with music videos, and then cut to the emotional punch of it later, and it kind of throws you off your game to like how you consider such a thing. And then another show that you know shows, you know, this is something that people are debating with reason. It's a heavy issue. So
I think it's interesting because I think maybe even as recent as like 5 years ago, if you put abortion in a show, you're either trying to be edgy or you're doing a very special episode of.
Oh yeah.
And now it's starting to get to the point where it's another potential tool in the arsenal to talk about, especially on shows like You're the Worst, which has gone to depression, PTSD. So abortion is right there in topics where they can take it on in a way that's realistic and dramatic, but at the same time funny. And I think that the same thing, Craziest Girlfriend, is a show that's a light, funny comedy, but at the same time is dealing with stuff like, you know, not knowing what you're doing with your life or romantic difficulties or any number of things like, you know, work, you know, not knowing what you're doing with your life when you're older and you've got kids and you don't know what to do with your job. It's definitely got a little bit of underlying seriousness. I think it works really well in that.
Yeah. All right. Let's hit up our last question. This one comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, "Hey, TV dudes, I've been enjoying Lucifer on Fox. Just wondering if any of you guys have thoughts on it or surprisingly good network shows that you are watching." That's the first part of his question. We'll hit that first.
So, I have not watched any of Lucifer.
No.
Same here. But there's another Fox show that I just can't get enough of.
Which is?
Lethal Weapon.
I love Lethal Weapon.
Seriously.
Really, guys?
Yeah. I was hating on it the first episode. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to get into it.
Yep.
Damon Wayans, he's grown on me. Yeah, I kind of like what he does with the character, too.
You hated Damon Wayans in particular.
But you still like the show. I could tell even then because you're like, I don't like Damon Wayans, but the show's pretty good. And he's grown on you.
The first episode, it was like, this is a good show, but Damon Wayans feels so out of place. And then he actually kind of comes to the forefront of some of the episodes. Mm-hmm. And that makes a little more sense. I know it feels so weird saying it, but it's good.
By the way, there's an episode that has Michael Raymond James playing an ex-Vietnam vet and Karina Logue playing the sort of pharmaceutical manufacturer that made the combat drugs that he's coming off of.
What?
There was a mini Terriers reunion.
Did they see each other? Did they interact?
Yes, they did. In fact, she was like the big bad, and I think that they had a scene together. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it led to the end.
It did, right? At the end, yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was
awesome. And guess what he was drinking the whole time?
Hank Dolworth?
Milk.
Milk.
Oh.
Milk the whole time.
The whole time.
Like, why would Hank Dolworth be liquid?
Yeah.
Liquid, yeah.
You know, 6 years later, a lot of things have happened.
Terriers went weird. Remember that season where he turned into a soft drink? And I was thinking Pitch and Timeless are two shows that I was kind of digging on network.
I'm halfway through the last episode. I was running late to this because I was like right at the like point in the episode. It's a good one this week.
Timeless? But,
Timeless. I'm digging it.
I'm liking Timeless too. I mean, Timeless and Pitch, they're both network shows. Like they both occasionally do a little of the melodrama kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Pitch is very occasionally music video-y, but it's really good.
Well, let me ask, are you still keeping up with This Is Us?
This Is Us has three episodes sitting unwatched on my Hulu.
Uh-huh.
And I like it whenever I watch it, but I think it has probably fallen to the prey to the curse of too much TV.
Uh-huh.
And same with Speechless.
Boring, sappy garbage.
You're boring, sappy garbage.
I think I'm only two behind on Speechless. I've been sticking with that.
Have you? I think I'm two or three behind.
All right, and the last part of his question was, he said, Trevor Noah is actually, let me go back to that. He says, has Trevor Noah improved in your estimation? Sadly, we had to have an election that has tempered and sharpened him.
I haven't gone back to give him another shot. Have you been watching any?
Well, there's your answer in the question right there.
Yeah.
If you know, he was doing better, Donald Trump wouldn't be president, right?
That's right, Trevor Noah. It's on you.
You ruined it. We trusted you.
Where was Jon Stewart?
There was a news story I read where it was like, is Jon Stewart to blame for the election?
Everyone's to blame. There's so many blame to go around. But Trevor Noah, I've seen a few of those like GIFs going around of him, and I'm like, oh, the writing is still sharp. The writing's always been sharp. But I just don't know if his delivery's got any better because he just never seemed to care.
I've watched a couple video clips that, like, you know, pop up on Facebook or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's tapping into what he wants his voice to be a little bit more. I feel like
that's good.
This election has given him a bit of drive to be angry, to be passionate, and to have that focus. And
yeah,
it seems to be getting a little bit better.
Also, he probably didn't be sent to back to South Africa because, you know, that's what's going to happen to everyone who came here from anywhere else.
What he needs to do is he needs to get more traction with the Facebook and the YouTube stuff.
Yeah,
because that's really, I feel like, how John Oliver broke in to kind of like the people who weren't watching his show, is just having these great bits like, hey, here's my main segment, come check out the show. And Samantha Bee's also doing that.
Yeah.
So if he can figure out how to package his stuff better for that 3 to 5 minute chunk.
I mean, they had the packaging. It was already set up when The Daily Show was going under Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
Problem is that his delivery, his material, it wasn't hitting. It's not resonating with people in the same way. So he needs to improve there. just improve that, I guess.
We've got some news this week. Before we get into it, we've got four stories. They're from Screen Rant, and what's the other one? We're from iFilm/Film. So, there's been a whole thing going around Facebook lately about fake news,
mm-hmm.
and there's definitely something to be said. I don't know if these guys are getting paid for this or what, but there is something to be said for journalistic standards that are just not being met on the internet, because both these Screen Rant stories are basically stories taken from Deadline.
Do I need to stop like sharing that one?
No. They've got the stories. It's just that
I look at it.
They're both from Deadline. They're both rewritten such that they bury the lead. Like the story about Dr. Mirage comic book TV show is in the works at the CW. That's the story. That's the entire story. It's in the headline. But they don't mention it until, like, the end of paragraph 2. It's this whole little thing about, well, the CW's programming slate has always had an eye toward the comic book crowd. Smallville. And I'm like, you're going back to Smallville to talk about Dr. Mirage? That doesn't make any sense. Basically, it's like these guys are either being paid by the word,
mm-hmm.
or they don't understand that you need to engage your audience early. Because I had to read this thing 3 or 4 times to get the actual story out of it.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'll grab my news from Deadline.
I'm not saying it's you. I'm saying these. I mean, Screen Rant's a major site. There's a lot of news that pops up there.
I love how right before we hit record, Grant looked at you and goes, oh, are you ready? And he goes, oh, yeah, I got something. And then you're like, Grant, your news, it totally sucks. You're really ruining this. You're the problem with Facebook.
No, I don't think it's Grant. I think that, like, everybody, all four of these stories from Screen Rant and from /Film.
What do you want me to do? Actually read the articles?
No.
That's not the generation we live in.
What are you going to do?
We look at headlines and then we get angry. That's what we do.
No, Grant. We share them. I want you to become the editor at one of these sites because you wouldn't let this shit slide.
Maybe I would.
At any rate, I'm just saying, these guys, start with your goddamn lead.
Yeah. So, Dr. Mirage show, huh?
So, yeah, the news is that Valiant Comics is... I've totally buried the lead. I've become what I beheld.
This is the example we were trying to illustrate.
Yeah. Dr. Mirage is a comic from Valiant, and it is going to be getting developed at the CW. I don't know how far along it is, but it's being developed by Annabelle screenwriter Gary Doberman.
Yeah.
Sure. That guy. He's penning the script and will executive produce alongside Chris Fenton from something called Collide and Chris Cowles from something called The Number Station.
Is Valiant a part of DC?
No, Valiant is a standalone company. It is, they produce a shared superhero universe that's more in sort of a science fiction vein a little bit.
Mm.
And they've been around, they've been rebooted like four or five times. They've had numerous owners. They've gone out of business numerous times. This latest version seems to be very deeply backed. They've got deep pockets. Yeah. They've been putting out books for about 5 or 6 years. And the books they've been doing, they've got a few things like Faith, who is a character who's sort of a fangirl who's overweight and who flies, and she's sort of unlike any other character in comics, and she's their breakout character. But
I actually picked up that number one, and no lie, I was in Portland.
Yeah.
I sat down to eat at the bar at this diner.
Uh-huh.
This girl next to me, much younger than me, she pulls out a Faith graphic novel.
Nice.
Like a previous one.
Nice.
I was just like, dang. But yeah, no, it's interesting stuff.
But so Dr. Mirage is the story of a woman who is a semi-retired private investigator, Carmen Mirage. Well, that's her stage name, basically. She's Shen Fong is her real name. And she's able to communicate with dead souls, except for her late husband. And she's trying to solve cases and bring peace to the recently bereaved and maybe get her husband back from the spirit side.
Maybe he's not actually dead. That's why she can't talk to him.
No, he's dead.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was being insensitive there.
Yeah, he's dead, Grant.
This is a little weird because, you know, the CW's been really in bed with DC.
Yeah.
Like, for them to be stepping out on their boo like this seems a little shady.
Yeah, but it makes sense. This feels like something that would be in line with what they're doing with, like, Frequency and that kind of thing. So I can see where they go for something like this. It is interesting it's on CW and not on a bigger network, but Valiant is sort of a smaller company, and I wonder if it's basically these are the guys who made the deal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at some of these costumes here. Do you think that's going to translate to the CW universe, or do you see this getting a similar approach that some of the other shows get? Where
I think that Dr. Mirage in particular is sort of costumeless.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine, like, she doesn't wear a costume. She's just a private detective, and there'll be ghost effects and that kind of thing. So I don't think any of this will have to worry about translating. If they were to do, say, Harbinger or Bloodshot, it might be a little trickier, but they are working on a web cartoon, or not a web cartoon, a web series done by the guys who do Superhero Beatdown, Bat in the Sun. And those guys have done really good with low budget. They've done really good special effects and costumes, and they did a trailer with Ninjak and Bloodshot and some of those guys in it, and it looked great. So I think you could do it on a relatively low budget.
Cool.
All right, next up from my favorite site, Screen Rant, is Neil Gaiman is developing a fantasy series called The Building at Fox.
Mm.
Neil Gaiman, of course, has American Gods coming up. He seems to be making his move into television. And this is a based on a film called Parallels, which was released exclusively on Netflix. I've not seen it. Have you guys seen this?
I remember hearing about it because someone said, hey, this is kind of similar to that script you wrote, Grant. A little bit similar.
Written and directed by Chris Leone, it is about a building where those inside are transported to alternate realities where history didn't exactly play out like it does on our Earth. Some are hostile and extremely dangerous. Others are more technologically proficient. The catch is the infinite amount of alternate realities makes it near impossible for those to travel in to find their way back home. And that was what the movie's about. I want to see that. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
The Building is apparently a story about the origins of how this all happened.
Mm.
And I'm curious. Like I said, I haven't seen Parallels, but that description, sort of alternate realities all set in a building and how that all came to be, I'm interested.
It's kind of like that movie Stay Tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where but instead of a TV, they're trapped in a building. Mm-hmm. That's alternate realities.
Maybe this is the show where we get Amy and Rory back.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman's going to write them back. We're going to get them out of that giant hotel.
Charlie Cox wants Bullseye for Daredevil season 3, but his co-stars don't.
It's
a joke.
Is that because what's her name would die?
Both Karen Page and Elektra both killed by Bullseye in the comics. So yeah, that was the joke that Charlie Cox was making.
Yeah,
and then Eldon Henson, who played Foggy, joke that I actually heard they're going to cast Zach Galifianakis as Bullseye.
So what do you actually think of having Bullseye, though, in the series?
I think it's crazy they haven't done it yet. Bullseye's like his best-known adversary.
Yeah.
Like, obviously the Kingpin, but Bullseye has been so formative in fighting Daredevil that I'm shocked they haven't gotten to it yet. I'd be surprised if he's not in season 3.
I really
want to see what they do, because Bullseye working for the Kingpin and working against Elektra, they've set everything in motion to do Bullseye right.
And it seems like Colin Farrell's not doing anything right now.
He had his chance.
He's capturing amazing creatures with Eddie Redmayne.
That's right.
Is that
Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, he's catching Fantastic Beasts.
Okay.
Oh, that was like the off-brand. Like, he's catching great creatures. He can't.
Yeah.
It's like the generic brand. It's the one that's on Netflix right now.
We couldn't get the rights from Warner Brothers to actually talk about their movie.
It's a spectacular creatures and where to locate them.
Oh, and wand wavers. And
it's on Netflix right now. It's kind of like Atlantic Rim, which I think is a real thing, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Finally, Marvel has announced that the Inhumans TV series is coming to ABC in 2017 and will premiere in IMAX theaters.
So
what? Yeah.
So my understanding is that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they were kind of setting up the Inhumans with their... Well, they were exploring Inhumans.
Yeah.
But this isn't going to really relate to those people.
No.
Because that was garbage.
Yeah. This is going to be the royal family, the classic Inhumans, Black Bolt, Medusa, all those guys. That's an interesting thing to do. ABC has proven not great with this stuff. Even Agent Carter, which I like, was kind of cheap looking from time to time.
Yeah.
How are they going to make something look good in IMAX? That's not their strength.
No.
Does this mean we're not going to get Inhumans the film?
Probably not.
Damn.
I never thought that was going to happen.
Man.
Remember the flying car?
Yeah.
The first episode of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I remember. Yeah. Here's the only spot of light I can put on this. Remember Lost was on ABC at one point?
Shut your mouth.
Lost? No, I'm saying Lost is a show that you could have shown in a theater. Like, it was gorgeous and lush.
Yeah.
So ABC is theoretically capable of it.
But they would have to pour Lost amount of money into that.
Yeah.
You mean like Marvel Disney money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have it, right?
They should. It's just there does seem to be something of a war going on between TV and film and Marvel Studios. And
Medusa's a hard character. Like, yeah. That's going to look cheap. Like, if you try to do it like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's got to be right.
Yeah, that's hard to get right.
Yeah.
Just always wearing something on her head.
Anyway, I'm very, very skeptical, but I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It sounds terrible.
Yes.
SNL.
That's a sentence I never expected to hear on TV Dudes.
I kind of wonder about that. Like, Variety, that's this huge chunk of TV, and yeah, we rarely talk about it.
Well, we did talk about the Tracy Ullman show.
It is Variety TV, I guess.
Yeah. So, Dave Chappelle made his spectacular reappearance in entertainment with hosting SNL this last week.
Yep. Can I share, just before we talk about his spectacular reappearance, let's talk about his unspectacular reappearance. This is about 4 years ago. I'm living in Memphis, and he's coming to town. So I buy tickets, like $40
tickets.
Were you
at that show?
In Memphis?
Wait, was this the one where he just was booed by people and he just stopped going doing stuff?
He just did crowd material the whole time. He had maybe he had a couple pre-prepared jokes, but I mean, he took forever to get out there. So I mean, I felt like we were waiting for the longest time. I don't think there was an opener. And when he finally came out, he just started talking to people. It's like he didn't have any. He's like, look at how big my arms are. Hey man, you got a funny shirt. Tell some jokes. He's like, shut the F up. Like, it was awful. And I was really scared that SNL was gonna be similar to that.
It's sort of interesting because, you know, he came onto the scene. He was just like the small time actor. He was doing stuff like in Half Baked.
He was in Con Air
in Seattle and Con Air or whatever. Little bit parts here and there, and then he started doing the Chappelle Show. And it blew up.
Yeah.
It was so huge, and he was suddenly making money, and he felt so put in the spotlight for stuff that, if you're doing the type of humor he was doing, and it's kind of floating under the radar,
yeah.
I think he feels more comfortable, like, being edgy, but, the whole star power of everything, like, freaked him out. He had a little bit of a breakdown.
Yeah.
Walked away from his contract.
Yeah.
And then he went to Africa for a while, and then he kind of went underground for a while.
Yeah, that dude Wesley Sniped, he disappeared.
Yeah.
To the gym.
But, then he got all Carrot Top. He started working out a bunch. And, he's also pretty notable for, he's one of those people that goes on stage and does marathon comedy performances where he will try and beat records and do a 4-hour performance or something insane. Him and
Dane Cook were going back and forth years ago trying to get the longest set.
I think he did 6 or 8 hours on one of them. It was just like, how, what?
Man.
What are you, you're not saying anything. So when you say he goes up and just does awkward crowd work,
mm-hmm.
I bet he just feels comfortable not really saying anything that's poignant. But this is a bit of an exception. So he came back, and boy, did he have some material.
Ooh. Oh, man, and he killed it. That opening monologue, I didn't know how much I needed that. Man, did I need that.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because I feel like a lot of what he said appealed to both sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't just a, fuck you, Donald Trump supporters.
No.
It was, hey, this is a situation that all of us are dealing with on both sides.
Adam. Yeah.
I'm going to give him a chance because, everything's always fucked up already.
Yeah. That was the interesting. And that was sort of the through line of a few of the sketches, too, is this whole thing of we're all stunned and shock. And a lot of people of color were none of this surprised us. We knew this was coming. It's always been shitty. You guys are just now waking up to it.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting point of view. I also loved him talking about that. He's like, yeah, last time I went through this shit, I was poor. This time I'm rich. It's going to be different for me. it was funny, but it was also really, it's kind of like when Louis C.K. is just on his best. It's it's funny, but it's also got a truth to it. And I loved that monologue.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he said, grab him by the pussy.
Yeah.
A joke. He apologized to Lorne Michael.
Yeah.
But the North Carolina Republican led news station, whatever. They censored that. But you voted for that guy for president.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know who it was. There's when he's doing the monologue, you can see behind him there's a woman watching him. And I feel like that was one of the network, the producers or something. And I kept watching her to see when she was smiling and to see when she looked nervous.
Oh.
And it was half and half.
Yeah.
It's too funny.
Yeah. So I thought he brought some life to the show, which I don't generally watch. I've not been a Saturday Night Live. And when they went to the credits, I know two people on that show. I know Michael Che.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I know more than two. I know Michael Che. I know Kate McKinnon, obviously. I know Bobby Moynihan because he's been on forever.
Leslie Jones.
And Leslie Jones.
And Keenan from Keenan and Kel.
No, I don't remember him.
You don't know Keenan?
Nope. Nope.
Orange Soda?
Somewhat familiar, but I
guess Kel was the Orange Soda guy.
And Colin Jost, I've heard the name, but until he showed up on Weekend Update, I'm like, oh, that's who that guy is. I've never seen this guy before.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, because I watch SNL pretty regularly, even when it's bad. I kind of watch it like sports. is my team going to do good this week, or are they going to get their ass kicked?
Yeah.
Some weeks they get their ass kicked, but I am cheering when they do good. And that is one thing that I've been really impressed with this Weekend Update.
Weekend Update was good, except really for Michael Che, who seems halfway there.
Well, he also hasn't been doing it super long.
Okay.
So there is, you see this when new, I guess this is his second season, but that one joke that he bombed, he did it kind of gracefully. It kind of made it funny, too.
Yeah, that's true.
The break.
True. Yeah. I still have a bit of a grudge against Michael Che because he did The Daily Show for a week,
mm-hmm.
and he was great, And then he left to do Saturday Night Live. I was like, God damn it.
But don't you have a little respect for him? Because then almost immediately after that, we found out Jon Stewart was leaving.
Yeah.
So it's like he was the guy who saw the writing on the wall. You kind of got to give him credit.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. You're right.
Which he does have a unique opportunity here, kind of breaking the format that they've gone with in the past.
Yeah.
And really working with Colin Jost to try to, you know, bring something new to this.
The back and forth they had was really good. I thought the quick cut between them reading stories, the make a joke, punch, get out. I like that format a lot for Weekend Update. And I'm a big Weekend Update fan going back to, you know, Dennis Miller, obviously. Mm-hmm. But also even back to like Dan Aykroyd and that kind of stuff. Jane Curtin. Like I like Weekend Update. It's been good a lot of time. Chevy Chase, you know, there's been a lot of good people on that. And I thought these guys held up the tradition really well. Like it's really fun.
That quick banter. I mean, I think that like Seth Meyers and Amy Poehler did that really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, I gotta say, Kate McKinnon's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Oh. It was so dumb, but I kept laughing at it. It was so dumb, but it made me laugh so much.
It's so goofy.
Where do you guys stand on the opener? Because some people are really gripey. Like, Saturday Night Live, you had Donald Trump on. You can't do a sincere opening like that. And I'm like, I don't think it was a Hillary Clinton or Saturday Night Live. That was Kate McKinnon.
Well, and also, it kind of seemed like a Leonard Cohen tribute, too.
But which some people are gripey because Leonard Cohen's never been on SNL either.
Ah.
So there were definitely people looking to gripe on that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a pretty powerful performance. And, you know, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
And it showed real talent from her. She played, she sang that. And, you know, parts of those lyrics, despite whatever the original intent of those lyrics were, really resonated with what was going on right at that moment. I think it was a very important performance.
And let's not forget, it was funny. Yeah, like seeing Hillary Clinton playing the piano after she lost, like I just started laughing immediately.
Yeah.
And then you get to the end and, you know, she's got tears in her eyes and it really made you feel a little something.
Let's talk about the breastfeeding sketch.
I don't think I saw this.
Oh my god, it was terrible. It was so bad.
You know, with Dave Chappelle in it?
It was with Dave Chappelle.
Oh yeah, it was bad.
And it was with Leslie Jones, and it was the gag was that he was an adult who was still breastfeeding. And you know how Saturday Night Live sometimes takes a gag and runs it into the ground? And you're still like, why is this sketch still going? This sketch definitely hit that point where I was like, I got it. It wasn't funny. And you guys are going to stick with it for another 2 minutes.
Oh, see, no. The funny thing, though, is I'm cracking up over here just thinking about it because I was dying laughing. It was so terrible.
Oh, you liked it a lot?
It was, no, but it was bad, but it was funny. Like, so I'm going to spoil it.
Oh, you can't spoil it. Well, I mean, you can't spoil it. You can talk about all you want. It's not going to spoil the show.
So the funny thing for the sketch, it's a gag where she's got a, Leslie Jones has an apron in front of her.
Yeah.
And Dave Chappelle keeps sticking his head behind the apron. And every time he does it, there's some device back there that's spraying him with milk. And then by the end of the sketch, it's kind of spraying out the side.
Yeah.
But then there's Kyle Mooney. Like all the guys who are there at a sports party are like, oh, gross. And then Kyle Mooney's just sitting in the corner like, oh, I think I'm going to hang out for a bit.
he was good. He almost saved that sketch.
Yeah. He was the funniest part for me. And then just seeing him getting sprayed with me. It was goofy.
We mentioned a little bit the skit where, you know, the liberal group is all watching.
Oh my God. That was...
And I thought it was funny. You know, it had some really poignant moments. But Dave Chappelle was terrible in that.
Yeah.
Like, his acting, his reading the lines, his timing all seemed off.
Well, I feel like that was on purpose.
Yeah.
And it was even more so when Chris Rock came out there to kind of be like, oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
I thought they were sort of playing it for the cameras. Yeah. It was sort of like he's like, oh, I guess it's, I thought that was deliberate.
And then Chris, oh, yeah. Oh,
I don't know. I'm shocked. It just felt a little like awkwardly wooden rather than like being in the moment. And I don't know, it doesn't
well, and they good. Did that with another sketch too that actually kind of back to what I was saying before. I kind of watch it like sports.
Yes, that was a funny bit where they pulled it. It's like they start this dumb sketch about, I don't remember what it was, like it was all based on wigs.
Yeah.
And then they stop the sketch and they go to like an ESPN after game where they're asking them how they think the sketch went.
Do you think those wigs were funny? Those Jerry Gold wigs?
What went wrong out there? And it was like questioning a team that had lost the game. And that was a clever bit. I didn't think the sketch was that great, but it was a clever idea.
Well, and they did the same thing in that where everybody just acted really horrible in the sketch. Like they did bad timing on purpose to kind of set up the bit afterwards.
Well, that's kind of what was interesting to me. I was wondering if Chappelle himself, like, I watched the short he did where he brought back all his characters and Negan bit with it, and I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
And I watched how he performed on a live thing, and I thought there was such a stark contrast, and I was curious if that was throughout the episode, was that he sucks doing live stuff because that's not his forte, but he can do comedy on a stage, but he can't necessarily act.
I don't know.
In a live performance.
I definitely feel like there was a confidence to all the Chappelle Show stuff, and you see it whenever... like he raises his voice or he kind of like takes control of the conversation.
Yeah.
And when I saw him in Memphis and didn't really enjoy the show, and then a few times where he kind of fell flat on SNL, I saw him not have that confidence. But then there's a few times where he kind of took control of a couple of the sketches and he got a little louder and his jokes were hitting a little more poignantly, I guess you could say. Mm. But yeah, I imagine it's like, you know, getting back on the horse, you know?
Here's the other thing I think you got to give them on this. This was a pretty solid outing, and you know that they had to rewrite a ton of shit starting on Tuesday night, right? Like, this had to have been a completely different show they were working on until late on Tuesday night when all of a sudden the election went a different way.
Yeah.
Like, they had to have a whole bunch of sketches that were ready that they had to completely scuttle and restart on what is essentially, what, 3 days before they go to air?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty impressive because some of the stuff was whatever. I mean, the milk sketch and some of those sketches I'm sure were in there. God damn it, Johnny's right about milk, isn't he?
Yeah,
we've mentioned milk like 3 times.
Oh my gosh,
it's happening!
But
and this is just 1 week of television.
Yeah, but I think that they probably had to rewrite a few things. Like the election sketch that they came up with was completely created on a Wednesday, probably, and the opening bit with Kate McKinnon, all that stuff. I think that they probably had to do a lot of extra work with that. So
yeah, well, Let's move on, to People of Earth. This is over on TBS.
Yeah.
This is Wyatt Cenac, who was actually on The Daily Show as a correspondent for a bit, left under some controversy.
Great story. Look at that YouTube video or that episode of Fresh Air if you can.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But he is now starring in this show where he is a reporter who runs across a self-help group that is dealing with being experiencers, or what was it? They're alien abductees.
Yeah.
And he's now realizing that he was an alien abductee as well. Aliens are real. They come in 3 different variations. And it's very absurd. What do you think?
Yeah, I really liked this. I thought this was really funny. By the way, this is created by David Jenkins, who's kind of an unknown, but it's being showrun and partly written by or directed by Greg Daniels from The Office and Parks and Rec and all that. And you can feel that sort of expert hand on the till, I think. But Wyatt Cenac is great. And Anna Gasteyer plays the lead of this group that is sort of they're people who've all been abducted by aliens. It's like a support group. And she's great here. Like, I've always liked her. But like when she was on Suburgatory, she was playing like really big cartoonish. And here I feel like she's more grounded and a much stronger center lead.
Agreed. It's kind of like what I was saying about Damon Wayans, where it really took me out of Lethal Weapon at first, seeing him, because I'm just so used to him. That's what Anna Gasteyer felt like in other things that I've seen her before. There's no point where she feels out of place in this show, though.
They have Oscar Nunez. They have H. John Benjamin. Yep. They have that Sonic commercials guy. it's a pretty well-rounded cast of people here.
I'll tell you what won me over about this show. No, I mean, it's funny anyway. Wyatt Cenac is funny. I always liked that guy. Anna Gasteyer does well with him. Everybody who's in the group, I like all those characters. But when they started showing us the alien POV... and it's like a workplace comedy for aliens, and they're just like snarking each other. It's like they hate these humans that they've brought in. They're just messing with them, and then the reveal that his douche bro boss is actually one of the alien lizard people. Like when they reveal that this was all real and that the aliens were going to see their point of view as well. That's what got me. I love the stuff with the aliens.
But they're all just kind of goobers, like trying to figure it out for themselves too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that my impression from you guys is that you liked it a bit more than me.
Yeah.
I watched it. I was like, it's kind of amusing, but it's still that TBS level that I'm not really going to get past that. I was like, interesting. occasionally I smile. I think I chuckled once. I watched 2.5 episodes and I was like, that's good. I'm good.
You know, I thought the same thing, but I looked at it differently. I was like, it's TBS, so I'm going to set the bar a little low.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to get away with much. And I was actually surprised at how much I enjoyed it for a TBS show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually got to the point where I was watching episode 2 and I went and watched episode 3 and 4 because they're all up on TBS.com. And I went through and followed it all through because I wanted to see where they were going. It's not like... it's not a level of something like Atlanta or The Good Place or one of those, but it's a solid enough comedy. I liked it.
And it has room to grow. And that's what I'm most excited about. I think we'll find out in this first season what kind of show it wants to be.
Yeah.
The interesting choice for me is Wyatt Cenac very much playing kind of the straight man in this.
Yeah.
Which I'm wondering if he's, you know, writing on stuff or, you know, what he's doing. But I feel like he could definitely... He's more of a character guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I guess we haven't seen him outside. He's always had such a dry and removed kind of persona that fits with him being the straight man to everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump over to Lovesick. Tell me about this show. I don't even know what this show is.
Me neither.
Either of you guys?
Nope.
It's so funny. Neither did I. And then I saw that it was coming out, and I was like, well, a Netflix show I don't know about? I got to check this out. This Lovesick, it comes on over in the UK on Channel 4. Are you guys familiar with Channel 4?
Oh, yeah. Channel 4 does a lot of stuff I like.
Uh-huh. IT Crowd, I think, is Channel 4.
I believe they did Catastrophe with Amazon. I'm pretty sure that was Channel 4. I want to say Black Mirror was Channel 4.
Perhaps. I wish I had a list in front of me.
Yeah, I feel like Channel 4 did a bunch of
stuff. The internet will correct
us,
right?
Yes, of course, yes.
Well, luckily here, you know... you don't have to wait long to find out what the show's about, because in the first 5 minutes of the first episode, it's the main character, and he's sitting down at a STD screening, and he finds out, you have chlamydia! Yay! And then I remember, turning on the show, what all the episode titles were. They were all women's names.
Oh!
So if you haven't already guessed, it's kind of a How I Met Your Mother, but it's How I Got My STD.
Oh, and he's trying to trace it back?
Well, not necessarily trace it back. Each episode is him going to tell another ex about, I'm sorry, you have chlamydia. Like, he has these little cards that he has to give him. And then the entire show is told in kind of a contemporary timeline, or like in present day, and then also flashbacks.
Okay.
And yeah, I was really digging the show. The first season, 5 episodes, came out on Netflix last year. I imagine they were probably released overseas sooner. And yeah, it kind of follows the story of this guy who literally has an STD, but also is just hopelessly romantic and lovesick. Like, just doesn't get it. He wants a relationship so bad, and the thing that's holding him back is himself, you know, just wanting it so bad. And his friends are the same way. He has the buddy who overcompensates and is kind of like the ladies' man. He's got the super insecure guy who has just gotten divorced, or I guess in the first episode has just gotten married. It jumps back and forth, so you never really get a sense of, you know, this is going to happen or that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So this is a comedy, right?
Yeah, and it is a comedy.
Did you ever watch Hello Ladies?
Yeah, with Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, and he's an awkward guy just trying to get into a relationship, and he's got his buddy who's getting out of a relationship, and the other buddy's like an asshole. It sounds like a little
I can see
going on there.
Here's where this is a little different.
This one's actually funny.
We'll get to that in a second. The first season, yeah, I'm totally digging it. Hilarious. I mean, in the first 5 minutes, she's like, I'm sorry, but your chlamydia is positive. And he's like, but that doesn't sound very positive. And it's like just constantly like little jokes like that. You really have to pay attention or you'll miss stuff. But so with Hello Ladies, it was told from the point of view of a single guy. Every story, he's already in a relationship.
Okay.
And he does those things that we've done to just destroy our relationship, whether it's smothering the girl, whether it's not being, you know, attentive enough, doing this. And what this show, I feel like, yeah, it most certainly suffers from is they do that thing that The Office did in the first 3 seasons with Jim and Pam, where every episode you're just like, tell her you like her. Tell him you like him.
Yeah.
And they just, they dangle it. And they did that for a first season, and this week, the second season comes out, and I'm already 3 episodes in, and guys, it's more of the same.
Oh, that's too bad.
Just dangling it. And the jokes are starting to wear on me. I'm going to give this season a full go. But yeah, I do feel like they may have lost a little bit of their steam. I know a lot of these UK shows, they tend to have really great first seasons, but not necessarily need those follow-up seasons. So we'll see where it goes. But that first season, 5 episodes, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I can do that.
And they're quick. 30 minutes long.
I had the same reaction to Catastrophe, actually. I loved the first season. And the second season did not do it for me. And maybe it's the thing with like British like seasons like this. I don't know. I'll check it out, though. You've intrigued me. I'll check out season one.
That's the bait and switch. Oh, yeah. We got you as a loyal viewer. Now we don't have to do that much.
Yeah.
We just coast for the second season.
I always just assume that British showmakers or showrunners were just kind of lazy. They're like, well, here's my show. We already made the season. You want another one? I'll make another one.
Yeah, I'll make another one.
But it's just like the first season.
That's always the problem with like second seasons. You put all this effort into thinking about that first season.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I got to do another whole one. I have to like... Yeah. Like keep this.
He's
going
got
with
eight more ex girlfriends that he has to tell have chlamydia. It's like five. That's a lot. Yeah.
Or like you get to the second season, but you're shown an island. You just don't know where to go.
Hey, you're not completely wrong. But hey, I was gonna say True Detective. You got a lost. Jeez,
everything goes.
That's only because it's funnier to me. I like Lost season two. I know the tail section stuff
didn't
wind up coming in anything.
Terrier season two had that same problem.
Yeah.
Dun, dun,
oh wait, a bigger problem. There was none.
Oh.
Ouch. All right, let's talk about better things over on FX. This also just wrapped up its first season. This is with Pamela Adlon.
Yep.
And it's a single mom with 3 rapscallion kids.
Yep.
Just trying to make it.
Yep.
What'd you think, Randy?
I love this show. I think that Atlanta, for as good as it was, stole a lot of the thunder from this show because I do think Atlanta, if you're looking at Atlanta and Better Things, Atlanta is the better show. I mean, Atlanta definitely did something different.
Yeah.
Better Things is like the female Louis, but that's more different than you think because Louis was very much a male 40-something, 50-something maybe comedian who's divorced, who's a single dad. A single woman actress in her late 40s trying to make it in LA is a totally different thing, even though it sounds like just a gender flip.
Yeah.
And so this had stuff to say. There's a great episode where she gives this talk at her daughter's school about being on her period, and it turns into this sort of rallying cry. And it was such an amazing episode. And then there's another one where one of her daughters is sort of struggling with what does she want to do with her life? And she's you know, we've all been to this place.
That was one of my favorite episodes.
And she gives the speech. She takes her to a place and she's like, look, you dressed up in these clothes and now you look like someone who knows what they're doing. That's all it is. These people have the right clothes. And it was such a great inspiration. I'm like, I want to show this to my daughter, but it's so inappropriate to show to my daughter, so I can't. But it was like, there's some really nice messages in here along with some really funny shit.
Well, what's really inspirational, and I don't have kids, you guys have kids, you probably are more inspired by this than me, but she shows that your kids can be shitty, you know? They can be shitty 24/7.
Yeah.
That's not an excuse to be shitty back to them.
Yeah.
Like, you still have to be a good parent despite your kids because of, you know, how shitty they can be at times.
Yeah.
And yet to see her just take it from them, you know, one word after another, and then go and deliver just this emotionally charged stuff and really, you know, give their kids confidence and make them feel, it was some moving stuff.
Yeah. It's really funny. And it's got a lot of interesting things to say. I loved every episode of this, and I love when they do things like she goes with her friend to the club. There, and her friend who like there, she's talking about the kid meets up with another kid and the kid's dad knows her mom's friend. And he's like, oh, I'll tell my dad. You said hi. She said, well, don't tell it in front of your wife. And she's like, you blew that kid's dad. Did you say, oh, yeah.
Is that the Mormon episode?
No, but that was another one. But the Mormon friend was also, that was really good because that sort of did the thing where they set you up to think, okay, this is going to be about how awful religious people can be with people who are sort of living these non-religious lives. And instead it turns out like, oh no, they're just being shitty to these people because they don't understand. And it turns out the Mormon was the good guy in this story and that she needs to learn that this woman was having a shitty life and she couldn't talk to anybody about it because she was in this religion that didn't allow her to talk. And so they become this friendship sort of across barriers, which I thought was really interesting.
Was there Was there a giveaway at the end of that episode to insinuate that the Mormons were all in some type of a swingers group at the school?
I didn't pick up on it.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean it isn't there.
I feel like I remember her delivering some dialogue like, oh, you didn't hook up with so-and-so's dad? Like, oh, he's good in bed. Everybody knows it.
There's a whole runner going throughout the 10 episodes where she's texting this guy who clearly is either married in a relationship and lives out of town. It's like she's more invested in the relationship than he is. And it's sort of a, like, he's coming to town, she wants to see him, but he may be coming with his wife, and she can't. And there's never any culmination to it. It's definitely a thing in the background where she's, like, texting him. She's trying to have some time to talk to him. They have, like, phone sex in the final episode that gets interrupted by an emergency call.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of that look at the sort of sad state of affairs of being, like, maybe a single mom who's having to settle for someone who's not available.
Yeah.
It's got interesting things to say about all relationships at all levels. She's also got her mom, who's clearly a little deranged. And that whole relationship between her and her mom is really interesting. Oh,
the episode where they're going to go on the trip.
Yeah.
Oh, can't spoil it, but geez, that one hit hard.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just, it's a really great show. There's a lot to say. And I feel like anybody who liked Louie would really love the show. I think it's honestly, it's more consistently funny than Louie. Louie would go to a melancholy place. I think Better Things is more strike zone comedy, but it can also be sort of deep and meaningful.
Huh.
It's a great show. It's possible it'll make it's a good year, but this is one that could possibly make a top 10 for me. I really liked it.
Wow.
I'd love to see it go on a couple seasons and we never get to meet her Mr. Big.
Yeah.
And then like in the last episode it's Louis C.K. but playing like
a different
You guys
version.
Didn't see him on SNL, did you?
He
had a douchebag character he played, which was really funny. anyways.
Well, hey guys, let's move on to Westworld. Did anything happen this week?
Oh my god.
Yeah. Did we discuss the thing that actually happened this week a few times?
Yeah.
What?
In defense of people who didn't see it coming, I feel like everybody's been like, well, so-and-so's a robot. Well, if so-and-so's a robot. Yeah.
So, hey, spoiler warning for anyone who I guess hasn't seen
it. Spoiler territory, go watch Westworld.
But yeah. Bernard!
Wow.
Oh, that was such a great reveal. And not only is it like, oh, he's a robot. He's a murder bot.
Yeah. And he didn't know. I mean, it's got that whole replicant Cylon thing going on.
Mm-hmm. It is tragic because they made him into a really interesting character.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a viewer, there's something I'm losing a little bit in the fact that, oh, his whole backstory, that's fake. You know,
yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, all characters in all television shows, they're actually
It's
for my benefit. But it's a robot.
But it's like, this is like Wyatt being uploaded into James Marsden's character. It's like it's like this whole life that he feels so deeply is 100% fictional in the world of the fiction.
Yeah.
Well, what I feel like what the show is trying to do is they're trying to get us to care about the robots as much as the human characters.
Yeah.
And they first started that with
Maeve.
No, the woman.
Dolores.
Dolores.
Yeah.
And then James Marsden's character.
Yeah.
Then I feel like the next big point was who runs the brothel?
That's Maeve.
Maeve. And then with this, I feel like they're like, I don't know. These things can be smarter than humans. They can be more interesting.
So was the implication that the new young chick who was like, we need a blood sacrifice.
The board member?
That she's also a robot?
I don't know. Because
he just knows that conversation happened.
That's the question. I was discussing this last night with our fellow TV dude, Ashley Moreno, because we were discussing this episode. And we were discussing whether or not that's very specific language. Like, obviously, they're making a reference to it. So is the question, does Ford have that board member in his pocket? Is she a robot?
Does he hear everything?
Does he have the whole park wired where he was pointing out to Teresa before she died that he knew everything she was up to?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know which one of those three. My original thought was she's a robot, and that the replacement that we saw them making down there while Bernard was killing Teresa is going to be Teresa's robot replacement, and that Ford is basically replacing everybody with robots. But now I don't think so.
I think the most important question is, does he have like a Roomba bot that he made to clean up dead bodies?
Well, if you were killing a lot of people, wouldn't you make a Roomba bot?
Yeah. Like, My sole purpose is to clean up dead bodies.
Yep.
My God.
You remember, you know, Roomba, there was the Roomba cam on Breaking Bad. There was DJ Roomba on Parks and Rec. So murder cleanup Roomba would be a trend.
It's a natural evolution.
Yeah,
in
it's
a way.
A natural evolution. Yeah.
As long as it has a milk feature.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's got milk to. Up.
I think there's a lot more credence to the theory that Jimmy Simpson is the man in black.
I am 100% convinced of this theory now.
Because when he's talking about this experience is more real to me than me trying to pretend I'm this person in the real world.
Yeah.
And how that resonates with a person being so engrossed in this gaming that he would commit himself to it 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing kind of the beginning hints of, like, you know, his relationship with the actor on the train. I don't remember. The guy who's also driving around on the horse.
Lawrence. Yeah.
His relationship with him early on and how that he comes back to him and kind of torments him.
Yep.
Later, his relationship with Dolores, which at first seems like a love affair, and then later he's kind of got some rape thing going on.
Do you remember in the first episode when the Man in Black rapes Dolores, he's dragging her off and he says, "Let's get reacquainted."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely think that's the first time he's seen her in like 30 years.
Really?
I think that that was a nod to him saying... The twisted sense of humor that he's developed, he's like, come on, you don't remember me, but we had an affair. And I think that that was what he was like. He was making a sick joke. I don't know, but that's what I think's going on there.
I mean, 30 years of playing the game, I'm sure he would have.
You would think he would run across her.
Yeah. That would have been territory he would explore. Yeah.
I almost kind of took that as like, you know, this is his weekend retreat. So this is like first stop. You know, he goes and rapes the farmer's daughter.
Yeah. It's possible too.
Because what did he say? It's no, I come here because you struggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I come here for the struggle.
Maybe he didn't actually rape her.
Yeah, maybe not.
That's one of those things where it totally looks like that initially.
Yeah.
But maybe he goes there and he like, you know, extracts information from her. I don't know.
It's possible. I mean, we haven't seen it. And they're sure as hell throwing curveballs at us.
Oh yeah.
By the way, I want to say beyond all the sort of surprises and shocks, they had a great set piece in this episode with the Ghost Tribe and the Confederate soldiers and that whole big action set piece. That was a great set piece.
Yeah. The train being stopped.
And I'm a big fan of that set, too. That's just really sharp looking. I mean, all the sets in the show look great. Yeah.
So where do you guys think this goes from here? We got three more episodes, right?
Yeah.
8, 9, 10.
I don't know. I assume we're going to get the big reveal about the split timeline, but maybe not till episode 10.
They'll probably do it episode 9.
Yeah.
Big penultimates. You know how they do.
I don't know where they're going here.
Why do you guys say that with so much assurance?
Well, there's a split timeline?
Yeah.
There's been so much evidence for it. If they're not doing it, they're teasing us that they're doing it.
What kind of evidence? Do you want to tell Kyle that?
Oh,
Bring it.
Okay, so I've wrecked this. I've ruined the show for now, Grant and Ashley, because neither of them knew this was a theory, and then I put the theory out. They're like, oh, now I. But
now you can feel that.
You can feel
too.
That pain too, and I feel kind of bad doing it now, but I'm gonna
destroy my world.
When Jimmy Simpson steps in on episode 2, if you look, it's the old Westworld logo. Not the new current one. It's the old Westworld logo in the world.
It's like a V and then it's like another line for a W.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's just a regular W like a
V. Yeah, they've got a new logo. So he goes in when they're using the old logo, and they've showed that old logo in various other places, like throughout most of
the lower floors and stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, all that stuff's the new logo. Hmm. Like everything we're seeing is in the modern, is like in the 30 years later. Jimmy Simpson's character, William, has interacted only with robots. We haven't seen him interact with any of the human characters. We haven't seen him interact with Ford. We haven't seen him interact with anybody else. We've only seen him interact with Dolores, with Lawrence, who we have seen in The Man in Black's as a different role.
We know Lawrence or Dolores was in from the very beginning.
Yeah, we know Dolores is one of the early bots. Lawrence, when we see him in The Man in Black story, he goes in as if he knows him, and he's in a completely different role than the role he's in Jimmy Simpson's story.
They make a real point of him choosing to be light, choosing the white outfit and white hat.
Yep.
And, you know, how he's transformed into the man wearing fully black outfit.
So when you say Jimmy Simpson, you're talking about The Man in Black?
We're talking about Jimmy Simpson is William, the younger guy.
Young guy. He's with Dolores. He
okay, okay.
With
yeah, that's the white actor. Yeah, that's the actor.
Oh, okay.
And then
he's the same guy as Ed Harris.
Ed Harris, 30 years later, is that character. That's the theory. And they've sure pushed things to the point where that looks real likely.
Damn. Maybe it'll be episode 8. Episode 8 was when Ned got the whole...
It's true.
So...
If you
follow a certain formula, have the big punch happen right there.
By the way, this did get renewed for a second season.
Yeah, officially confirmed.
Officially confirmed, although possibly not till 2018. Is that what I saw?
Dang.
Yeah.
That's sick.
They got some time to write.
Yeah.
What are we going to do here?
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Man, I'm loving this show, and every episode I just love it more.
It is fantastic.
Yep.
And I'm sure next week we're going to be back with a bunch more speculation and theorizing going on for episode 8. But we want to say thank you guys for checking out our show. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
And if you guys stay tuned, you patrons, we got another little episode coming out your way. So go check that out. And thanks for all the support. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.